you bring up the agenda?
I will. Give me just 2 seconds.
I'm seeing 73 next to the number of participants. Is that correct?
Yeah, we've got 55 folks in addition to the commissioners and staff that make up about 19 panelists.
And Bob, while we're waiting for the agenda to be pulled up, there is it's up to the discretion of the chair to handle the public comment. I think there have been some folks that may have been looking forward to public testimony under the hatchery policy review. There had been some public comment expected under North of Falcon, Puget Sound RMP in particular. Those were the postponed matters. And so there may be some under the Willapa Bay policy as well. So as you move through this, this had been a question for Larry as to what degree and how he was going to manage for public comment piecemeal as we go through this or what. So
So I guess my question is to start out, I don't know how much time we have, and I think that's going to depend on how much public comment we can have will depend upon how much time we have for this meeting.
To my knowledge, we have like 3 hours for the meeting.
3 hours for the meeting. Okay. Yeah. Well, then, I think it makes sense then to have people comment as we go through each agenda item. And as I would think that the hatchery policy, why don't we just launch into the hatchery policy, get the staff kind of presentation on that, and then you can just go from there. So, but 3 hours, okay. Very good. So why don't we start off? How about officially we kick off the meeting? Thank you for everybody who's attending the meeting, and apologize for some of the technical difficulties. We're working through this, but so we've got on the agenda hatchery policy review, Willapa Bay policy progress report, 3622 comprehensive review, and then fishery management issues, North of Falcon discussion, Puget Sound Chinook management plan, RMP discussion, and then lastly, CARES Act fishery assistance. That is an important topic, the last one. My guess is that there's not a lot of people calling in for that issue. I know that's important issue for the commercial industry. So if we get there, great. If not, maybe we can have a briefing later, if that's okay with you, Ron.
Thank you, Commissioner Kehoe. That's fine with me. I can tailor that short briefing to the amount of time the commission wants that to be. I can either take, I had originally planned on only taking about 10 or 15 minutes when I cleared this with Chair Carpenter. So,
okay, good. So, so why don't we start off then with, unless there's any other business that we need to take on, I think we should get going. Who on staff is the, do we have Lori Peterson? Is she going to kick us off on this?
Commissioner Kehoe again. Ron Warren from the director's office. And I'll ask Nikki to pull up the policy that I had sent in. I will be covering this. Chad Herring will be on to cover the Willapa Bay policy update. And then Kyle Addicks will be given a presentation to cover North of Falcon, the Puget Sound Chinook Resource Management Plan, And then I'll follow up with the CARES Act information at the end. Do have additional staff on, as you can see in the participants, in case we have questions of the commissioners, so that we're able to react to those here today.
Very good. Okay.
So, first of all, my task today was to bring back a policy that had specified alternative language that had been taken and approved through or guidelines that had been approved through previous commission meeting. So unfortunately here today, I was not able to get that far enough along to be able to share anything with actual substance. So what we've done here is just rename the policy to the anadromous salmon and steelhead hatchery policy from the hatchery and fishery reform policy, and the taking each section from the black and red document that was shared at previous commission meetings that's also on the website, and trying to identify in each of the sections what was to be done, or a generality of what was to be done per the commission guidance. So I could belabor going through each one of these sections and describing that, such as the definition and intent here on the center of the screen, that it was yet to be completed, and that the directions or the guidance was to try to offer some rewording of the paragraph to reflect changes in the purpose statement above. Each of the sections, again, follow the outline in the previous commission guidance from documents from the last meeting. And so those are reflected in this. My apologies, the workload that has the CARES Act that maybe we'll spend 15 minutes on later has brought to myself with the other COVID-19 activities by the division managers from in fish program science, as well as fish program hatcheries division managers, has just kept us from making any progress on this to date. And so I'm here to see what direction the fish committee would like us to go from here, since that we did not hit the initial benchmarks or assignment deadlines that were originally laid out.
Okay, thanks, Ron. So Tess, let me know, my audio is breaking in and out, and I will call in a little bit, but I'm going to open it up to commissioners' thoughts about how to proceed.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Yes. Ron, thanks for the presentation here, and thanks for putting this up. It is a little disappointing that since last April, there hasn't been draft language for us to look at here today, but I think it's understandable in these tough times if since we did ask for your heavy involvement in this, that if you've been pulled off to deal with this CARE Act that involves, is it $100 million or it's not, it's tens of millions of dollars, so it's a significant matter for the state here for you to deal with. So. Our original schedule had that the committee would be taking a look at some draft language here and providing some feedback to the staff, and have a little iteration there to the point where by the end of June, there would be some sort of a public document that could be sent out to a variety of places for some public review by the general public, by the interested people that are following this, the tribal co-managers, to the Salmon Recovery Boards, and the rest. So this workload problem that you've identified, do you anticipate that that's going to continue to the end of June, or should we be looking at some other ideas on how to keep to the timeline that has been so urgent this year, that we try to get this done this year?
Commissioner McIsaac, thank you. My anticipation is that the CARES Act is going to be front and center on my plate through likely the middle part of July, or maybe a little bit later. We are supposed to try to have spend plan, Washington State spend plans done by the first part of July. Got multiple public meetings that we're trying to coordinate right now to get out and meet with sectors. And we're coordinating with the state family, as well as staying connected with other interstate commissions around the U.S., as well as just staying in touch so that we see if we have any comparative spend plans with the state of Oregon, who is doing a marvelous job in thinking through some of the obstacles of at least their commercial industry. And we're happy to be working closely with them, but think it's going to be a pretty heavy lift until we get our spend plan off to NOAA for approval.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for that. Well, it might be time for us to think about other ideas on how we can get some draft language going here. And I think if we're going to have some public testimony on this, maybe it's prudent to wait until that's over to decide a course of action. But this is to the policy language stage for a lot of this. There needs to be some heavier staff involvement, particularly on the HGMP paragraph and the adaptive management paragraph, where a variety of scientific studies have been called for to do a proper job of being able to adaptively manage. But anyway, I guess I'm thinking right now that maybe the committee itself, the committee members themselves, ought to maybe be more involved in putting some language together that can interact with the staff, so that by the end of June, anyway, we could get back on track and be able to complete what we had hoped over the course of the summer leading into the August commission. So that's an idea. And so, Commissioner Kehoe, I'm not sure how you want to handle the public comment, or if Commissioner Graybill's got something else, or if we've got Commissioner Carpenter here with us yet. But there's an idea maybe I'll just throw out.
Okay, so what about, I think I'll go to Commissioner Graybill. Do you have any thoughts, questions?
Can anyone hear me, by the way?
Oh, we got you.
We can hear you.
I'm going to pass the gavel over to you, Larry.
Oh, no, you're doing it. I'll be having, listen, I apologize. I don't know what's been going on, but I think I can do business now. So continue on, and I'll jump in here in a moment once I get my forehead dried off.
Okay, go ahead, Commissioner Graybill.
Thank you, Bob. I think we could probably make a contribution through those of us that have been kind of assigned this duty to oversee or help work with staff on this and make some progress. It may be ambitious to have everything ready by August, but at least we could make some progress. Staff can make recommendations for adjustments. We should be able to contribute to the progress of this in some manner.
Okay, yeah, good. What about other commissioners? Any questions, thoughts before we see if we have public testimony?
This is Larry. Yeah. If you can hear me, I do support that approach. I know the staff is incredibly busy, Ron in particular, with his CARES issue. And I would welcome and be honored to work with my colleagues on the Fish Committee to craft some language. And we'll probably have to engage Ron occasionally if he would be kind enough. And let's move on.
Very good.
You have your hand up.
Kim?
I don't know if I did.
Commissioner Thorburn.
I do.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Kim.
Thanks. Kim runs with Jim. thank you. That would be great if the Fish Committee can take this on and assist with how staff have had duties spread so thin, because we have been at this for a long time. It's of tremendous interest to a huge variety of stakeholders, and I want to keep the momentum going. We've had the two great analyses, the science report and the policy analysis. As you move forward, I was kind of reminded of early concerns that I had when we embarked on this by the Lower Columbia Salmon Recovery Board letter. What a lot of what was presented in the science analysis about hatchery contribution to what is our sort of overarching goal, and that's recovery of healthy stocks throughout all of our salmon anadromous zones. So I didn't see in the areas or in the discussion reference to that as sort of the overarching goal that we must keep in mind. We heard in the science report that there are concerns that are well documented scientifically in terms of hatchery fish on that recovery, strains and limited habitat, how it has to go hand in hand with habitat recovery. And then the thing that the letter pointed out to me, because we're looking at the HGMPs as a way to ensure that our hatcheries are contributing to conservation, is they establish a floor and not a goal. And I just hope that in this policy that we keep the goal front and center, if I'm clear.
Yeah. Thank you, Commissioner Thorburn, for that. And I think the committee will certainly take that into consideration as we, you know, draft. Yeah, go ahead.
This is Jim Anderson. While I'm not on the committee, I would like to comment with regard to the moving forward, I think it's absolutely critical that we keep momentum going. And I know when we set this schedule a couple of months ago, we were right in the middle of North Falcon, and Ron and others were booked. We probably did not expect that things would continue on quite like they have, and that they would be booked even more so now. So I appreciate the difficulty of the staff being able to get on this. But having said that, we've also have serious commitments to moving forward with this, and I want to just give all encouragement that we try to pick up as has been discussed, to try to stay on the schedule that we set up for wrapping this up, at least in the initial phase, by October or so. So I just reiterate the earlier comments about trying to make this work.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Anderson. Any other commissioners?
This is Dave Graybill. Bob?
Yes, go ahead, Dave.
I just wanted to tell Commissioner Thornburn how much I appreciated her comments. And
the letters that we've received from the Lower Columbia Fishery Group pertains to this document primarily, but also in recent calls, they have also shared concerns about the Columbia River policy, and particularly to your comments about the floor versus the goal. And that is a concern that's been shared with others. When we look at these, the structure and implications of these policies, that we're operating at minimums right now, and we need to move in a direction of more toward the goals rather than just doing the minimum in terms of conservation. So Kim, thank you for that comment. Jim, you're right. We're going to do what we can to keep this moving forward. It is difficult now, even more so, but I think it's important that we do keep in contact with these other groups and organizations that are going to be impacted by this. And so as we develop language, we should invite their input along the way without stalling the progress of our meeting deadlines as we're trying to do. That's what I'd like to say about that. Thank you, Bob.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Craybill. Anything else? Anybody else? Or staff or anything? But if not, maybe Tess, can we get a show of hands of how many people might want to testify?
Sure. For folks who have joined, if you can look for *9 on your phone or the raise hand feature down at the bottom of the screen, so we can just get a quick show of help us with time management here.
And Commissioner Kehoe, Ron Warren,
yes.
Just for clarity, you are seeking public input comment for this particular agenda item?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for that clarification. So people that want to speak to the hatchery policy review, that topic now, and then time allowing, we'll allow other testimony.
Great, thanks, Bob. It looks like at this point for that topic, we have 5 people who have raised their hands, maybe 6. We have someone fluctuating.
So why don't we then move forward, and I've got my little time gizmo here. Let's do 3 minutes each, because I know there's a lot of interest in the other topics as well. So
yeah, let's start with Jamie Glasgow and Steve Manlow. You're on deck.
Okay, Jamie, you're up.
Great. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, thanks, commissioners, for the opportunity. Really, I just want to reiterate some of the points that Commissioners Thorburn and Graybill just made. I too am concerned that some of the revisions proposed by the commission contradict best available science as it relates to wild fish recovery and the state's overarching goal of recovering wild populations to support sustainable fishing and orca recovery. I'm concerned that dismantling the state's fishery and hatchery reform policy and eliminating the use of HSRG guidance is contrary to DFW's own science review in the Washington State Academy of Science review and conclusions regarding effective management of hatchery programs in Washington. That information is pretty clearly spelled out in the reports from the 3619 review effort that you all authorized. And if you haven't had a chance to read that through really closely yet, I hope you will soon. I'm concerned that the proposed revisions conflict with existing commitments that the state has made in ESA recovery plans and hatchery genetic management plans, and in the state's longstanding efforts to recover habitat for wild fish populations. I guess I'll end with just a request for a little more maybe consistency in public review and opportunities for transparency when it comes to these significant changes to state policy that have implications for wild fish populations across the state. Just as an example, we didn't know until a few minutes ago that there were going to be opportunities for public comment at this meeting, and I know several others that would have attended this meeting and provided comment had they known that. So I understand there's a lot in flux and we're dealing with some evolving situations, but to the extent that we can have a better sense for when those opportunities are ahead of time, we'll be able to better prepare and hopefully provide meaningful input as you make these hard decisions. I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Bob, this is Larry.
Go ahead. Larry.
I'd just like to respond to that, if I may. Jamie, this is Larry Carpenter, and I've had a hard time getting on here, so I hope you can hear me. Since we have moved into the majority of the committees being open to the public, we have really tried to allow public comment in the face-to-face meetings that we have, and I believe you did attend some of those. So I'm sorry that if you didn't know that this is what we were going to do today, that's my bad. We want to give people a chance to weigh in. We want to hear what they have to say. So please know that your comments are appreciated.
Thank you, Larry. I appreciate that. And honestly, for today, it's simply a matter of not having public comment actually noted on the agenda. I do appreciate that. I know it's important to you, and I'm glad I had this opportunity today. I just know others would have prepared and joined us as well.
Thank you for your comment.
Any other questions or comments for Mr. Glasgow?
This is Jim Anderson. I've got a question for Jamie. You indicated that the draft policy somehow was undermining habitat restoration efforts of the state. Can you expand on that?
I would love to, Commissioner Anderson. Thank you. There are a number of places, including in Policy 3619, where a case is made for better coordination between the H's, that is habitat protection and restoration, hatcheries and harvest. This hatcheries and harvest policy 3619 makes that case, and it's that statement appears in a number of different places, including the statewide steelhead management plan and most of the salmon and steelhead recovery plans that exist in the state. And the review 3619 review that you all had performed reiterates the importance of making sure that happens. But also acknowledges that it hasn't happened to the extent that it that any of us would have liked. And just to give an example of how important it is that does happen, there are groups like ours that are investing literally hundreds of thousands of dollars of public money annually to restore access to habitat and restore the quality and quantity of fish habitat that's available. I believe that we are compromising that investment when those habitats are being used by hatchery fish that have a lower reproductive success than the wild fish that would otherwise use those habitats. And there's a lot of science to support that statement, much of which is coming from the Hatchery Scientific Review Group. And so, yes, there are opportunities and recognized opportunities, I would say, to improve the effectiveness and the benefit that we see in our investment in habitat by making sure we meet the HSRG recommendations for things like percent hatchery origin spawners and make an effort to reduce ecological interactions between hatchery and wild fish by making sure hatchery programs are sized correctly. There's a lot more I could go into, but maybe I'll try to capture some of those comments in writing and provide them to you that way.
Yeah, appreciate it. We have a big agenda, so thank you for your testimony. And next up, Tess.
Yes, next we have Steve Manlow, followed by Ron Garner.
Okay, Mr. Manlow, good to hear your voice again. Talking to you yesterday, so go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Can folks hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Thank you, Mr. Chair and board members. For the record, my name is Steve Manlow. I'm the executive director of the Lower Columbia Fish Recovery Board. My board has submitted some fairly detailed comments earlier in the week, and it sounds like some of you have had the opportunity to review those. I won't reiterate everything we're touching on in those comments. They're fairly comprehensive. I just wanted to hit a few of the high points today. First, we think this is a very significant update to the policy that does have repercussions to recovery statewide, and it warrants a very comprehensive and deliberate review. Our review really kind of focused on where the updated language either does or does not align with the recovery plan for the Lower Columbia, as well as the more detailed conservation sustainable fisheries plan that we worked out with Department of Fish and Wildlife to implement the recovery plan actions relating to harvest and hatchery reform, which is an important point. It is an all-age plan, and it's not all about habitat, but it fully integrates hatchery, harvest, hydro, predation, all of the different H's. The prior policy did have a pretty strong focus on recovery. We appreciated that. And with the new language, it does reintroduce some additional priorities like, you know, mitigation for lost production, lost habitat, et cetera. And I guess we're just not sure how going forward those things would be balanced in the policy. And with the elimination of the HSRG standards that was mentioned earlier, we're also unsure how programs will be objectively evaluated under the new policy. We really haven't seen yet where, if those standards are not utilized, what tools, what approaches are going to be brought to the table to really maintain an objective evaluation of programs and to help shape programs. You know, we do know there was a reference to HGMPs, but again, we're just not sure what that is going to look like in terms of some objective standards to be able to weigh how we're doing toward achieving those recovery plan targets out there. We certainly support the role of hatcheries, as we mentioned in prior testimony, for mitigation, conservation, providing fisheries. Those are really critical on the Lower Columbia. We just want to make sure that there's clarity on how this policy is going to continue to support recovery and make sure that we're continuing to make progress on those recovery goals that the department has set out to achieve along with the other recovery partners down here. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Perfect timing, Mr. Manlow. Questions? Okay, hearing none. Thank you, Mr.
Yes. Bob, I believe I just wanted to be sure that the letter that came from Steve's group is shared with all commissioners.
Nikki, is that, can you give us an update on that?
Yeah, I'm looking it up now, but as far as I know, I did share it with everyone.
Okay. All right, well, that's fine.
Yeah. So, I received it, so.
Okay,
I think that,
okay, well, thank you, Mr. Manlow. Next.
All right, next we have Ron Garner, followed by Robert Sudar, and the two remaining people are Butch Smith and Greg King.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Garner.
If I could jump in for just a moment, this one, Larry. You're doing a great job running this meeting, so I'm just going to sit back and relax and let you handle it. I've got two days of work to do tomorrow and Saturday, so I'll just be a participant, and thank you for carrying the water today.
My pleasure. You do have a big day tomorrow and Saturday, so rest up and listen. Mr. Garner, please.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
We can.
Okay, thank you for the opportunity to speak today, and once again, appreciate the Fish Committee and the Commission's focus to try and see what we can do to fix our fishery issues and stop blaming hatcheries. Just as I heard a while ago, here we go again, it's the hatchery's fault for wild fish when we don't have the habitat to support these fish. Any reports you're looking at now, estuaries are damaged, we're trying to get habitat fixed, but at the same time, we can't continually blame the hatcheries as being the problem. We got a lot of water issues out in the salt. Mother Nature appears to maybe be turning the corner and coming back with the blob lessening. And also, there's been a lot of fish found out in our area where Washington fish reside in the ocean on one of the expeditions, Pacific expeditions. There's been some good herring spawns and things like that. So maybe I'm hoping we're rounding a really terrible cycle. But I would like to agree with what was said with Mr. McIsaac, Commissioner McIsaac, about trying to have the fish committee take the language over and get it done. This has been worked on since June 2018, and time's running out. We got four commissioners that are up this year to be gone or possibly replaced or maybe continue on, but there's no telling what's going to happen. And so we support the fish committee to take over the language development from Puget Sound Anglers. I would like to see this timeline kept to continue on. And this is the key policy language needs to be done by Don and the committee. We had the Washington Academy of Sciences get involved and Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife staff, and we didn't come out with anything that was asked for. Everything went sideways. Exactly what was asked for went into some other kind of language, and another paper emerged, and it never came out with anything about changing the attitude or positive aspects of hatchery production. So I think that's two of the major things, is we need a more positive look at hatcheries and supporting the commission or fish committee to take over this language and continue on and get this done. So this year is imperative, and we really thank all of you for all your hard work.
Thank you, Ron, for your testimony. Any questions for Mr. Garner? Okay, hearing none, thank you.
All right.
Next, yeah, go ahead, please.
We've got Robert Sudar up next, followed by Butch Smith.
Okay, Mr. Sudar, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Robert Sudar, Columbia River Commercial Advisor. I think those of us who lived long years in Washington and have been involved in fisheries know that there have been a lot of hatchery decisions that weren't necessarily good, looking back 50 years or more. But the result, the bottom line is that hatcheries are basically mitigation for lost habitat. And it's difficult to regain some of that habitat ever. It's been a challenge for the department to make gains on that. The original hatchery wild plan was ambitious and had some timelines that the review a couple of years ago indicated weren't even close to being achievable. I think we've made a lot of recent gains in terms of not moving runs between watersheds or hatchery stocks between watersheds. We certainly have seen improvements in dam flow to make benefits for both hatchery and wild fish. But I think that the original plan doesn't fit, and that we're all interested in recovery, but we also are interested in some available harvest, and that hatcheries are part of that. And I think that what Mr. Garner says is in line with my take on the importance of hatcheries and the fact that they aren't just to be vilified. And I think there's some newer information coming from the tribes that I would like to have some of their biologists come and talk about in terms of hatchery-wild interactions. But I think that's the quick and dirty answer from my perspective on this. Thank you for the opportunity to talk.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Sudar. Any questions for Mr. Sudar? Hearing none, Butch Smith, the floor is yours.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and Commission. My name is Butch Smith. I'm a Board of Elwaco Chairman Commissioner and also President of the Elwaco Charter Association and on various many boards. Have to do with salmon and other species. I'd like to support the last three speakers. although I think at the time, you know, like science is basically experiment that we hope has worked, will work. And this one, in my estimation, has not to its full potential. The charter industry and the commercial industry, ocean fishermen, want to see wild fish flourish just as much as anybody. We want to see habitat rebounded. But we also know as fast as we are fixing habitat, we are losing habitat. And, you know, therefore a mitigation is important, hatchery production. Also, you know, the principles and the foundation of HSRG were to take a place in time and freeze it 2002, although the state didn't officially adopt it to 2008. It started around 2002, 2003. Something that we, I guess, to adaptive management that hasn't been accepted yet. We're just acting like we're still in 2002 is the pin and pit issue. You know, it was during the whale task force, which I was on, 8.5 million smolts are getting eaten before they even get out into the ocean in Puget Sound. I can't even imagine to guess what that number is in the Columbia River. And plus the bird predation. Sorry, Commissioner Kim, I love birds. And we are feeding the most expensive fish food in the United States of America. But we do have a avian problem on salmon predation. But we're still, not only are we raising a lot less fish than we were in 2002, and expecting the same results. And I just ask you to come visit the coastal communities and look at the devastation that not all, but a lot of HSRG has caused. And I need to remind you also that NOAA Fisheries uses HSRG as a tool, not the rule. And if they were using HSRG as the rule, we would be producing about 78% less fall tule Chinook. I think Mr. Manuel, at least in a conversation or in his document, stated that he was proud of a kind of recovery of the tules. But I also might add, if we were going under HSRG for the tules that we were raising on the Columbia River, it would be currently 78%. So I don't know less, and I don't know if that's a benchmark that we can say HSRG is working. But once again, you know, I agree with the commission trying to draft the language with Ron and Ron Warren and his staff. I think we can do this. I also sit on a couple tribal boards, the Billy Frank Salmon Coalition, and a hatchery coalition of tribal members, and I know they're very interested in updating this plan and seeing where in the last so many years it's gone wrong and see where it's gone right and fix it and move on. And by the governor's veto this year in the ledge session on third party oversight, I think that kind of sends a message also that
hey, Butch, just a heads up, yeah. You're at time.
But Butch is an elected official, but maybe just
for... I will, guys, just in closing.
Yeah, thank you.
in closing, I think, you know, between the WDF&W fine staff of salmon people and the tribals fine staff of salmon people, and we have NOAA's oversight that and the commission, of course, you guys can come up with a plan that will work and will hopefully look at the holes from the past that HSRG has caused, and maybe we can get a little bit of turned around so we can also feed orca whales. Don't forget those things are going away too. So anyway, thank you very much for the time at the commission meeting today, and thanks for your hard work.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Any questions for Butch Smith?
Bob, this is Larry.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
I just want to bring a couple things back into focus regarding today's agenda. All these issues, this issue is a very, very important issue. But we have two agenda items on this sheet of paper I'm looking at today that are critically important. And there's a lot of people standing by. So I want to encourage us to move on to those. We need to get to the North of Falcon discussion. That's going to be somewhat detailed and lengthy. And the Puget Sound Chinook Harvest Management Plan. And then when we're done with those, if it's still light out, we can move to Willapa Bay and Ron's CARES discussion.
Okay, very good.
So I'm concerned about not getting to the meat there's a great deal of interest in, and I think some important discussion needed. Does anyone disagree with that?
No disagreement here, Larry. I know Mr. King was in line to testify. Go ahead.
And Commissioner Thorburn had her hand up as well.
Go ahead, Kim. Go ahead.
Just a quick response to which is a testimony and the thoughts that I've had. I've written some articles about trying to conserve biodiversity, and I liken it to trying to put Humpty Dumpty back together again. And I think your comments raise that. It's like when we take an action, there's going to be a reaction, and it's not always positive. And that's really what I meant by my earlier comments, that we take a precautionary approach. I think some of this feels like pretty sweeping swing of the pendulum, and that we just keep in mind that we're trying to put Humpty Dumpty back together again, that we probably can't do that wholesale.
Thank you, Commissioner Thorburn. So I think appreciate the chair's comments. I think we're going to end public testimony on this agenda item. Certainly there will be many more opportunities, more Fish Committee meetings as we go forward with drafting language. Does anybody have any conclusory remarks that they'd like to make before we move on to the next agenda topic?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, please.
Yeah, just to try to wrap it up, I had been anticipating hearing from Mr. Greg King. We have heard some of his positions before. I hope he wasn't going to reverse any of those. I think we've heard from the public and from other commissioners and from a lot of people that we do need to keep this moving forward. So I'm very comfortable with the idea of the Fish Committee taking on the challenge of developing some language to move this forward and working with the staff between now and the end of June. And I think some draft of some sort of language can be done by then. I completely agree with Mr. Glasgow's comments and others that this needs to be a fully open and transparent public process. Good policy comes from being open and transparent and having everyone have a chance to take a good look at this and offer their comments. And so as I see this moving forward over the month of July, if we have a public document done by the end of June, July could be the review time for people, including our important co-managers. And at our August meeting, then there's a consideration for a more formal public review draft. That's what's on our current schedule. There's then the fall in the rest of August, September, and the first part of October for a very thorough public review process. There may be some more Fish Committee meetings at that time, and then a final decision in October. So I do see a lot of time for these concerns that have been expressed, for people to see what's in writing, to see if their fears are really manifested in the language or their hopes are manifested in the language, and that we can move forward with them. So.
Thank you, Commissioner McIsaac. Maybe I don't want to cut anybody off, but I think that's what the committee is going to do. We're going to kind of take the drafting pen and work along with SAF to get this document moving and get it open for public review and, of course, tribal input. And so I think that's how we're going to move forward. So. If nothing else, why don't we, following the chair's lead, why don't we skip over Willapa for now and then go right to the North of Falcon discussions, including the Puget Sound management plan, RMP discussions. They're very much related. So, Ron, are you going to kick us off on that?
Commissioner Kehoe, no, I am not. Kyle Addix is going to take the lead through this with the current technology. I think it's best to have one presenter and Kyle volunteered. So,
right. And so, go ahead.
Ron, this is Larry. I appreciate the work that's gone into the PowerPoint. We are running significantly behind schedule. I don't know that we need to hear a lot about the history of North of Falcon and why it is where it is. I want to get again into the significant part of why we need to address this, and that's been some outcome issues. So, would that be a reasonable approach to this?
So, Larry, I would defer to Kyle and how he can go through it. I was trying to, as Kyle and Mark developed the PowerPoint presentation, I kept saying, remember, it's part of this presentation is not only to you commissioners, but to staff and the general public who listen in. Some may not be seasoned veterans, and so we tried to tailor it to touch on a high level, quickly moving through some of that to make sure people had a full context of what we were attempting to do throughout North Falcon and our Puget Sound Chinook Resource Management Plan.
Okay, as long as we can get through what we need to get through.
Okay. So. Go ahead, Kyle. Why don't you start us off?
Thank you, Commissioner Kehoe. I think I've got my presentation ready to share. I wasn't quite ready when you jumped to me, but let me see if this works.
Yep.
Looking all right. Good.
Thank you. Before I jump into the presentation, a lot of the commissioners are know some of our North of Falcon team. I've gotten to know them pretty well over the years. Don't know if everybody was aware that we went into this North of Falcon down several veteran team members and vacant positions behind them. So from last year, Kurt Hughes has moved over to be our Fish Management Division Manager, Lori Peterson over to be our Science Division Manager, and Aaron Dufault over to be our Shellfish Manager. We kind of put off trying to fill those positions till we got through North of Falcon, had the positions open for applicants, and tried to do interviews quickly afterwards. We did fill the statewide salmon manager position, and Mark Botzel is now our statewide salmon manager. Unfortunately, that leaves another hole behind us in his old position of Puget Sound salmon manager, and now we're obviously facing a hiring freeze, so it's going to be slower than we had hoped getting back up to full speed for the North of Falcon team. Hearing Commissioner Carpenter's comments, I will let people know we gave an extended presentation at our 102 rulemaking hearing on Tuesday that's available on the website that gets into details on the background for North of Falcon and way more detail on this year's process than I'm going to go through here. And I will try to move through the slides I do have relatively quickly, and you'll note that the slides were dated May 14th. So this is the presentation we intended to give a month ago before this meeting was postponed. So again, we'll fly through the salmon management landscape and North of Falcon process and get into the 2020 challenges and outcomes and sort of the outlook for the future beyond 2020. Again, won't say much here. You all know we work in a number of forums for planning salmon fisheries, from the Pacific Salmon Treaty Forum to the Pacific Fishery Management Council Forum for Ocean Fisheries and the US v. Washington, US v. Oregon co-manager forums for inside waters. North of Falcon refers to that point, Cape Falcon, down south of the Columbia River, and it's the process we go through to plan all of the fisheries from there to the U.S.-Canadian border and inside Puget Sound and the Columbia. Work with a lot of tribes, have to work within the framework of the Pacific Salmon Treaty, the Magnuson-Stevens Act, a long list of federal court decisions, our ESA requirements, your policies for us, and state law as well. So some of the challenges we faced in 2020, obviously the COVID outbreak was the big surprise and changed the way we did business for most of this year. And we had uncertainty as we planned fisheries and what and when we would actually be able to implement under the stay home and stay healthy order, whether we'd be able to open fisheries, whether we'd be able to have staff out monitoring fisheries. That's starting to clear up, but still some uncertainty there. We had another year of really poor ocean conditions for smolts entering the ocean that would return this year. And that led to the poor expected returns of coho throughout Washington to the Columbia, Puget Sound, and coastal rivers. We had another year of poor summer Chinook and steelhead forecasts for the Columbia, poor expected returns of chum to Puget Sound. And a unique challenge we faced this year that I'll talk a little more about later is that we didn't have agreement with the co-managers on what our management objective would be for the Mid-Hood Canal Chinook stock. And that's one that of the ESA listed stocks that can really drive our fisheries from the ocean into Puget Sound. We had a normal schedule of meetings planned going into North of Falcon. We got down to the Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting in California, and the situation got worse. A lot of the tribes did not attend that meeting because of some cases down in Northern California. And as we got back home from that, we realized we weren't going to be able to have any more in-person meetings. So we quickly moved to go to an online format for the rest of the process, including the April final Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting. It's been a learning process. We've used multiple meeting platforms, and there's a learning process for staff and the public to adapt to each one. I'm sure the commissioners can relate to that. We did find that it allowed more engagement with stakeholders that may not have been able to travel to in-person meetings. So some people listened in and or commented that we probably wouldn't heard from otherwise. And it did allow for very structured and orderly public questions and input at some of the larger meetings. The problems of people talking over each other and such were limited by that format. And the screen on the right side of the screen is just an example. This was the meeting schedule we created for the final PFMC meeting, where we had meetings with the public at 7 o'clock each morning to talk about the PFMC agenda for the day. And then meetings throughout the day with other salmon interested constituents as we needed to get news to them and take input from them. This is a chart you've probably seen before. It's just this long-term ocean indicators, red light, green light system. I won't go into all the details there, but you'll recall the blob years in the mid-2000 teens, some of the worst years we've seen for salmon, looking at all these factors. Saw a little bit better conditions in 2018, and then 2019 back towards the red end of things. And that's a big reason for all of the poor coho forecast. Some of the challenges in the Columbia River, as usual, they're the difficulty of trying to maintain concurrent regulations with Oregon, the poor summer Chinook, coho, and steelhead forecast. Fall Chinook forecasts were down from the big years we saw from 2013 to 2015, but a little better than 2018 and 2019. So the fisheries plan down there are going to harvest URBs at the lower harvest rate, and if the run is upgraded, then we could access the rest of that. And the Tule Chinook impacts were limited and affected the buoy 10 season to fully access those URBs. The bright spot on the Columbia is sockeye forecast. The Okanagan stock is up this year, so there'll be harvest opportunities throughout the river for sockeye. Most of the interest, I think, today is probably in Puget Sound, so I'll spend a little more time on that. This is just sort of a long-term graph of the forecast. So you can see 2020, not that different from the past couple of years. Over longer term, hatchery stocks are up a little and wild stocks are down a little, but nothing too extreme this year. Coho forecast were really our challenge for a lot of planning this year. This is a graph that we've used in the recent past, or a map we've used in the recent past, just sort of showing how the forecast compared to a recent year average. You can see there's no green on this map. Even some of these blues, for instance, the Queets, the Strait of Juan de Fuca's streams, and the Snohomish, they're neutral, meaning they're close to our recent term average, but those are stocks that have been at low abundance and that we actually have rebuilding plans in place for. So it was not a pretty picture for coho. The Columbia River Oregon Production Index forecast was one of the lowest in the past 20 plus years. which really drove what could happen out in the ocean and in the Columbia River with coho fisheries. As we develop our fisheries each year, we have harvest limits that are defined as exploitation rates, or the percentage of the population that can be impacted by fisheries within a year. And each year as we start planning fisheries, we take the previous year's forecast and the current year's abundances and try to rerun the fishery models. So if we say, if we held fisheries constant from last year, what would those exploitation rates be on our critical stocks? As we did that in 2020, with the 2019 fisheries, we saw that we were over the allowable southern U.S. exploitation rate limit for Snohomish Chinook. We were over the Mark Chinook, still a Guamish southern U.S. limit. We were over the Midhood Canal pre-terminal SUS limit. And again, this is a stock where we did not have agreement with the co-managers on what our management objective would be for the year. We've overhauled the FRAM model over the past few years. We enacted a new base period updated from a set of years back in the 70s and 80s to more recent data, and have made some subsequent corrections to that model. And the department believed that it was appropriate to adjust that exploitation rate limit to account for those changes to the model. So we weren't proposing increasing the actual impact on the stock. We were proposing holding it steady, but adjusting the rate that is used because of those changes to the model. The tribes did not agree to that sort of adjustment and maintain that it should stay at the 12% it's been in the past. Skagit Spring Chinook with last year's fisheries were well over the limit. That was one that was primarily a terminal area freshwater fishery issue. And then I keep mentioning how bad coho forecasts were this year. When we tried to put the 2019 fisheries in with the 2020 forecast, the coho model wouldn't even run as we started the process this year. Snohomish natural coho were forecast below their escapement goal. Again, that's a stock we have a rebuilding plan in place for, so it really limited what we could do with coho fisheries in Puget Sound. And the poor coho returns, primarily to the Columbia, shaped the ocean fishery with one of the lowest quotas in the last 20 years. One other complication we had as we went through the March and April meeting is that the coastal tribes couldn't reach agreement for a proposal for the treaty troll fishery off the coast. So we left the March meeting with competing quota levels for the treaty troll fishery that resulted in us having to do twice as many model runs through the process to match the different quota levels. And then as we got into April, more trouble trying to reach a single quota option for treaty troll, and that dragged on until the final day of the April council meeting. That really sort of slowed down getting to decisions on inside fisheries because we have to look at all of them in aggregate. So I mentioned the Mark's still a Guamish rate and where we were with 2019 fisheries relative to the 12% limit. The forecasts weren't that different. The total abundance forecast for 2020 was not that different from 2019. So why were still a Guamish Chinook such a constraint? So the abundances were similar, but the age composition in the forecast was very different, and that played a large role in the projected exploitation rates from FRAM. Now, majority of the projected impacts on still a Guamish Chinook will be on 2 and 3 year old fish, hence the higher impacts in winter fisheries targeting juvenile fish. I've got a couple of graphs that I hope show this relatively clearly. So on the left is the still a Guamish marked Chinook and a comparison of what percent of the fish were age 3s and 4s in 2019 versus 2020. You can see in 2019, 68% were age 3, while in 2020, 85% were age 3. So that really drove what the model said our impact would be on still a Guamish Mark Chinook in those winter fisheries in Puget Sound. Another graph here, and this gets into where those impacts happen by area throughout Puget Sound, and they're color-coded by age. And again, focusing on age 3, the green bars, we can see that time step 3, which is the summertime, the July through September fishery, the biggest impact is in Area 7 sport fisheries. And then in the winter fisheries, so the October through April fisheries, that's where the really big impact on Stillaguamish age 3 Chinook is. This is just a sort of summary matrix of the seasons for Chinook and Coho by marine area in Puget Sound. The color coding, the red are areas that were open in 2019, but closed in 2020. So you can see we had to make some major closures to winter fisheries to get that exploitation rate down to a level that we could get agreement with the tribes to move forward. We brought some ideas to the table, such as changing the size limit in Area 7, raising it so that more of those Stillaguamish marked fish would be released because of their size. We were not able to get agreement from the tribes to move forward with a proposal like that, and ultimately we're faced with either having to walk away from the table or agree to some more reductions to get the rate down to a level that we could get agreement on. Obviously, that was a very tough decision. Walking away from the table would have left us with a lot of uncertainty with ESA coverage and how we could get any fisheries to move forward for at least the upcoming year. This is a table that some of you've probably seen before. It's just a summary of all of the stocks that we have to manage for when we talk about Puget Sound Chinook, and what the model predicted exploitation rates were coming out of the final fishery package compared to the limits. And I'll just point out here that there were a couple stocks that were at their limit. The Nooksack Spring Chinook were at a 10.5% Southern U.S. exploitation rate, which is the ceiling. Mid-Hood Canal was at 12.2%, so that was in between the 12% that the tribes were proposing and the 12.4% that WDFW was proposing. Ultimately got to an agreement that we didn't have to get to 12. The other fishery changes we were making would get it down closer to 12. So that was sort of a one-year get-by agreement on that stock. And once we got to that, we had to turn our focus to the Stillaguamish marked exploitation rate, which again came out at exactly 12%. I think that's all I'll say on that one. I had a couple slides that were just taken straight from a Department of Fisheries and Oceans presentation. They've been very concerned with Fraser Chinook the past couple of years and acted some big closures in the Strait of Juan de Fuca and on their side of the border in the San Juans. And they expanded those. They kept what they had in place last year and actually expanded a little bit on those for both the Strait of Juan de Fuca and the Gulf Islands. So key outcomes for 2020, as always, our goal was to provide fishing opportunities consistent with the expected abundances and conservation goals for all species. The final fisheries package does meet all of those conservation goals. As I mentioned, we had to reduce recreational fisheries in the wintertime periods, but we did maintain or improve summer fisheries in Puget Sound, reopened Area 7 for a portion of a month that was closed last year, for one thing. We did reach state and tribal agreement for all salmon fisheries and subsequently received ESA authorization for Puget Sound fisheries for their effects on both Chinook and southern resident killer whales. Moving into the future, I talked about the Mid-Hood Canal issue and the exploitation rate ceiling there. We know that there are more updates to FRAM that are needed. We found additional errors in the base period data and such that need to be corrected. And those updates will have an effect on exploitation rate estimates for many stocks and may require revisiting the management objectives for some stocks. Those past updates are what led to the disagreement this year on the management objective for Mid-Hood Canal Chinook, and we've got more work to do for sure for that stock for future management objectives. But that situation with Mid-Hood Canal really highlights the importance of the adaptive management provisions for any long-term RMP. As we make future changes to the model, we don't want it to have unanticipated effects on fishery impact levels that are really just related to changes in the model, not related to any changes in fisheries. And it got a lot less attention through North of Falcon this year, but we continue our work with CHUM and trying to move towards a new comprehensive CHUM management plan with the tribes. And that is all I had presentation-wise. So with that, I will turn it back to you, Commissioner Kehoe.
Hey, well, thank you, Kyle, for that excellent presentation. So this is just, you know, I'm just looking at the clock, and so this is kind of what I'm thinking. I'm kind of going off the seat of my pants here. So I'm thinking that, you know, we'll take questions from commissioners here on this topic. I think then we'll ask Kyle then to move into the RMP update, and then questions from that, and then questions from the public. I think we should go until 3:30. I think there's probably a lot of folks that want to testify, but I do think it's important that we reserve at least, you know, the end of the meeting for an update on Wheel of Talk. You know, we can't kind of get kicked. So that's kind of what I'm thinking. I'm not the chair, but I just wanted to get people's input on that.
And Commissioner, if I could jump in for a second.
Yeah.
I don't have a formal update on the RMP. Some of these issues I've identified with adaptive management and what changes to FRAM will mean for management objectives in the future are going to take, I think, front and center with the tribes and how we move forward with anything. And we, so I don't really have a formal update on that, but I'm happy to talk about it.
Okay. Well, maybe what we'll do, if you don't have that, there may be questions from commissioners, status of that. So instead of a formal presentation, let's open it up to the Fish Committee. Well, first of all, are people okay with that kind of framework for the rest of the meeting?
Sounds good, Bob.
Okay, well, thank you. So so then, commissioners, Fish Committee members, questions for Mr. Addicks? Okay, Mr. McIsaac, or Commissioner McIsaac, please go ahead.
Thanks, Bob. I'd like to hear from some of the public here before I make any comments about, you know, what should the Fish Committee do about any of this that we hear about. So we've got the presentation here on North of Falcon. The commissioners, as the staff knows, is getting a lot of emails from folks. And it's not a lot of accolades that everybody's happy about how all it has gone, has happened. My question, maybe before public testimony, has to do with Stella Guamish hatchery for Chinook, their fall or summer Chinook, I'm not sure. When January rolled around and we were looking to endorse the RMP going forward, the question came up about what about this limitation on hatchery fish in the Stella Guamish and the possible threats to all the catch and release or the mark selective fishing in Puget Sound that targets hatchery fish. And at that point in time, the perspective was that it's not likely. In fact, that I think it was a little stronger than not likely. It's not going to be a constraint over the course of the 10 years of the RMP. And boom, all of a sudden here in the North Falcon thing, it may have become one. I'll ask for verification of that. In the presentation, they talk a little bit about age composition and 2 and 3 year olds. It wasn't clear to me what the anomaly was that would cause Stella Guamish hatchery fish to become a constraint. I heard somewhere out in a hallway somewhere that the 2 and the 3 year olds were strong. And that's what caused the problem. And it's always a little bit of a question mark. When things get better, why do things get worse? Kind of a question. So, but really it gets back to thinking that Stella Guamish hatchery fish exploitation rate ceilings were not going to come into play as a constraint. It would be something else. So is it true that they were a constraint? And if so, why did that happen? What was the reversal of the thinking, if I had it right to start with, that was not expected to happen? Not just in over the course of 10 years, not boom right out of the blocks.
Thank you, Commissioner McIsaac. As I mentioned, the abundance forecast this year wasn't very different from 2018 or 2019. When we had the same sort of framework for the management exploitation rates by marked and unmarked in place. It was really the change in the age composition that affected where those fish are getting impacted in fisheries, and meant that those winter sport fisheries had a much higher impact rate on those than they had the previous 2 years. So yes, it took us by surprise, especially given that our first 2 years of managing with those objectives, it wasn't the limiting factor. Some of the details, modeling of exactly how that works is a little beyond my grasp, but I think we were all surprised when we started looking at this year's forecast and putting fisheries in and saw that number jump up like it did.
So there's always been winter fisheries, and there's always been Stiligwamish hatchery fish as well. So is it true then that there was the two and three year old abundance is so much different than it was in the past, better, and that's what caused the exploitation rate to go higher? Or the hatchery, their slide said the hatchery fish were 14% better, so it wasn't a dropout in all the rest of the hatchery fish, I wouldn't think.
Well, it wasn't that. The slide I showed, the graph I showed, wasn't an abundance thing. It was the percentage of the fish that were there that were of an age class. So same total number of fish, but it shifts more to age threes this year than it has in the past. And that affects what fisheries the model says are going to impact those younger fish.
So Kyle, this is Larry. So then I assume there must be some input in the model that suggests there's an increase in license sales, increase in angler trips, increase in harvest. I mean, there must be something to justify that. Is there something that popped up that's new for 2020, or what's your thoughts on that?
Every year we update sort of the effort we have in the model based on what we've seen in the recent past. So areas where we've seen increases in angler trips, we scale that stuff in the model. I don't know how much of that change in 2020 affected the exploitation rate versus what this change in age composition did. But yes, we factor those things in. I don't think there was anywhere in the model that we had such an increase effort put into the model that it drove this increase. I think it's more related to the age composition of the fish.
Okay. Commissioner Keogh, I would agree with Commissioner McKaysey's comments. Perhaps engaging and getting some public perspectives on this might engage some opportunity for commissioners to ask other questions and dig deeper into this and be more helpful in finding some answers and a potential solution if no one disagrees with that.
Bob, you're still muted.
So, yeah, thank you. So that sounds like a reasonable approach, Chair Carpenter. So hearing no objections, so why don't we do that? Desk, could you tell us how many people we have lined up to testify?
Sure. At this point, we have three hands that are up, four hands that are up. Give folks just one more chance. If you're on, I see five hands.
Okay. So, you know, we have time certainly for more than five, you know, so I was kind of, so why don't we, and then I think then that will allow then more time for committee discussion back and forth. So but I do want to wrap this up by 3:30, this topic. So, all right. Who do we have first?
We are going to start with Michael Sear, and then we will be touching base with a phone number that ends in 2615. Okay. So Michael.
Very good. Michael Sear. So just so everybody knows the rules, 3 minutes. I've got my little stopwatch here, so in 3 minutes, I'm going to ask you to wrap up. So the floor is yours, Mr. Sear. Go ahead.
Okay. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Good. Good afternoon, commissioners, and hi again, Larry. This is Mike in Area 7, San Juan Islands, fished here since the 1980s, mid-80s. And I have a question for Mr. Addicks.
Yeah, maybe what you could do is, you know, we don't typically allow the public to ask direct questions. Maybe you could give us your testimony, and then there might be a follow-up question from a commissioner based on your testimony.
Okay, that's good. I'll just make a statement, and then maybe Larry can go from there.
Thank you.
My concern were the Fraser River Chinook return estimates taken into consideration for the proposed decision not to allow Chinook retention during September, Marine Area 7. And to go along with that, I personally witnessed targeting of Chinook in September last year for the purpose of catching, taking photographs, and releasing. My concern is that the fact that the mortality rate is probably going to be even higher for those fish that pass through here on the way to the Fraser. And I don't think very few Puget Sound fish go through here in September. So anyhow, that's my comment for what it's worth. So thank you very much for letting me testify.
Chair Carpenter, do you have any follow-up?
Well, I have some familiarity over the years. I've been up in the north end here, and those Fraser Lakes, those Harrison River fish historically are migrate through the area in the San Juans and in certainly September, sometimes early October. They are a very desirable fish, and you know, I don't know truly anymore. So that now that I don't serve on a U.S. Canada piece, I don't know what their populations are doing. But they're a very important fish to the area, and they do provide some opportunity. And I think that's what Mr. Sear was certainly sharing.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Larry.
Okay, so appreciate the testimony. Next up.
All right, next we've got the phone number ending in 2615. So if you can go ahead and state your name for the record, that would be great. And we cannot hear anything quite yet. If you're on your phone, you could try *6 as well in case something accidentally got hit.
Hello, there you are.
Okay.
I'd like to.
Otherwise known as 2615.
Yeah, remember that.
Go ahead, Mr. Petillo.
Thank you, Commissioner Kehoe. The comments that I have on the North of Falcon process are, I just want to have you refer to the written comments that I provided the department on the 8th of June on Monday. And I'm not going to go over those in any kind of detail. I'll be relatively brief here. The first one thing that I want to say is what a tremendous job that the WDFW staff did with the North of Falcon process in COVID mode this year, and what a challenge it was. And they definitely rose to the challenge. I was fairly critical about the public process in 2019, and I think the department really did a good job of improving that process in very many ways, and especially, of course, with the challenge of communicating directly. I want to also call out especially Mark Balsell. He has an excellent talent for communicating with the public, and he stays very calm, and he just has an excellent grasp of the issues. He's a good listener. I understand word is that Mark has changed jobs. I imagine he's being given more responsibility, more on his shoulders, and the guy can handle it. So I just want to compliment Mark in particular for the excellent job. So then my comments here, they slide easily between the Northrop Falcon process and the RMP, the Puget Sound Chinook Resource Management Plan. They're so intertwined. And my simple statement here is that it's obvious that the Northrop Falcon process, working with the tribes to reach agreement, it's crippled more than just the COVID crippling of 2020. And it's the focus of our energies here, ours meaning everybody's, yours, your, the department and the commission, need to be pushed to get a RMP done. I did hear that there is a potential for a delay in submission of the joint RMP and a new multi-year plan. I think that would be a shame if it happened. I know there are some technical reasons. I understand those, but I don't think that they're sufficient to stall out that RMP. If we have to go through another 2020, another Section 7 process where the tribes, the bottom line is that the outcome is a matter of the conditions that the tribes are putting on agreement. They're horrible conditions this year, and they don't make sense. And the Stillaguamish hatchery is one of those that doesn't make sense. I think, though, in a constructive manner, the best way to take care of that is to address it in a revised management plan. I hope then that, number one, the department moves forward as quickly as possible to find a way to have a Section 4D Limit 6 RMP process that will give them equal footing at the negotiation table of Northrop Falcon in 2021 or at the very latest 2022, noting the timetable for NIMS to review those kinds of RMPs. And I hope sincerely that the challenges that are presented uniquely by the Stillaguamish hatchery fish, which I do not think represent a conservation issue, but a issue of allocation. I would offer that just as to pique your interest, as Commissioner McIsaac has, that there is something that needs to be corrected there. It isn't just a matter of exploitation rates, but it is a matter of the true basis of conservation. I noted in the biological opinion for 2020 under Section 7 that NIMS made, there is not one mention of Stillaguamish hatchery fish. In fact, for the Whidbey Main Basin region in the central area where of Puget Sound, where Skagit, Stillaguamish, and Snohomish stocks are reviewed for fisheries impacts, it turns out that 5 out of the 10 populations in that region exceed their recovery exploitation rates. But it does not include, that list does not include Stillaguamish summer or early stocks. It certainly does not include Stillaguamish hatchery fish. Yet, despite the fact that those RERs are exceeded, the conclusion of NIMS is that the fisheries are consistent with recovery, and they're approving the 2020 plan, obviously. So
hey, Pat,
it's frustrating, and I'm going to wrap up.
Okay,
thank you. But the focus is on the RMP. Please pay attention to that. Please get that done post haste. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pat. And Commissioner, questions for Mr. Petillo? Okay, hearing none. Well, thank you, Pat. And next up, Tess?
Sure. Next up, we've got David McCraney, followed by Nello Pinkinich.
Okay, Mr. McCraney, you're up. Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Well, first of all, I want to thank the commission for this opportunity to comment. I'm a member of the board of directors of the Coastal Conservation Association and also a Puget Sound Recreational Salmon Advisor. I've been an active participant in North of Salmon, North of Falcon for the past 6 years. I echo what Mr. Patillo said. North of Falcon is simply broken. The co has disappeared out of co-management, and it's run entirely by tribal wants. So a possible solution to that, as part of the solution to that, would be for the state to get its own individual permit from the Department of Commerce to manage their fisheries. And I know you don't want me to take up staff time, but I wonder if somehow Mr. Warren or Mr. Addicks might give us an update on that effort. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, thank you. You know, I do know that, you know, certainly department has given some consideration to trying to get, you know, a permit. But I don't know, Kyle or Ron, you want to speak to that, whether that's feasible or if that's, you know, even a possibility for consideration moving forward?
Commissioner Kehoe, thanks. I know that we continue to talk about our engagement with the tribes. Have we talked about, have we sought out schedules, those types of things, to see if we could go our own way on a permit? Yes, we have. But believe that the obstacles in our way and the delay in any fishery is less than an advantage to us. Trying to get away from this annual need for the nexus to get to the current coverage, I believe, is a more appropriate way to go. But we continue to have that conversation internally. But again, trying to work towards finalizing an RMP. We have a lot of fishery tools that need to be modified, a lot of work that needs to happen this summer, but would hope that by the fishery season in 2022, we would have a completed authorization.
I know that there are some, as Mr. Warren says, there are some costs for taking that route, but in Puget Sound, we lost 28 months worth of fishing this year. So we're already having costs. So again, thank you very much for your time.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. McCraney. And is it Mr. Pasinich? Are you up next?
Yes, hold on, there we go.
Are we good? Yeah, okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, commissioners, for your time. My name is Nello Pasinich. I'm the executive director for CCA Washington. You've seen our coalition letter that we sent in. I think one of the commissioners early on said that a lot of folks are not happy, not only constituents, but some staff members that went through that process. And there was also a comment, I think, about what can this committee do, or what can the commission do as well. Before I get there, I would say that there's been some discussion about the Stillaguamish. I think that's a symptom of the problem. I do think there's a much bigger underlying problem than that. In the past, we've had Lake Washington as a constraining stock, Mid-Hood Canal, maybe now, maybe in the future. But there will be some fishery or fisheries that will be constraining stocks, I think, always under the way that this is done. I think overall, this is inequitable. And I think it's not consistent with the Bolt decision. There's groups out there, in fact, that are now considering litigation on this issue. And what I think we need a plan. I think we need a plan from the commission with tangible goals and deadlines, something that's achievable. But I think more important than that, we need a recognition that a problem exists. and probably an identification of what that problem is. And there's all kinds of solutions bouncing around of what there can be done. But I think we first got to identify the problem, and then we work from there. And I think until that happens, we're just going to continue to chase our tails. So I will end it there. And again, thank you. Thank you for the time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Pasinich. Any questions for Mr. Pasinich? Okay. Hearing none. Test, we have another.
Yep. We have two leader. More folks, Robert Sudar and Heath Hecla.
Okay, Mr. Sudar, you're up again.
Yeah, actually, I changed my mind. I'm going to pass on this opportunity. Thanks, though.
Okay, well, thank you. Mr. Hecla, it's all yours.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Kehoe, other commissioners. Ron, that beard is looking awfully white over there, so good to see it grown out. But anyways, thanks for the opportunity. You know, I really agree with Pat's comments. He has devoted so much time into this, and I think he's coming from the right place too, understanding the struggles that staff have, the burden that this is, and trying to find a workable solution. So I hope you guys will give his comments, very strong consideration. I also agree that the word cooperative sure feels like it's gone right now from co-management. If you look at the definition of cooperative, it is involving mutual assistance in working toward a common goal. And I think you really have to ask yourself, how is the mutual assistance going? How was the mutual assistance when we proposed to reduce the slot limit in those winter fisheries in an effort to try to keep some of them? And on pure policy basis, that was rejected, and we took a major hit to those winter fisheries. So, I knew Billy Frank. He was like the only guy that could call you a swear word and have it be a term of endearment, frankly. And it really did feel like that. And I don't think Billy and those folks would, believe that this was the co-management that they had fought so hard to establish. So I really agree with Nello that I just wish I realize you're in a difficult situation, but to just be candid with the public and about what's gone on and that it's not equitable, it's not fair, and to develop a plan to hopefully fix it. This will have very real impacts on people, on businesses, on, livelihood. And I don't know that people are thinking about that. So those are my comments. Thank you again.
Okay, thank you, Heath. Any questions for Mr. Hecla? Okay. And so that's our last public.
Correct.
Who wishes to testify? Okay, well, I'm going to throw it back to the commission. You've heard Kyle's presentation. We've heard from the public. Just open it up for discussion for folks.
Question?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
So a question for Kyle again. When I asked about the Stillaguamish hatchery fish, whether they were a constraint causing the complete closure of the Area 7 winter fishery or the Northern Puget Sound fishery, or can't remember all the green charts, but somewhere in that area, the answer was no, they were not the constraint. And we heard Mr. Patillo talking about Stillaguamish hatchery fish at some length. So what was the constraint, if you were going to identify one, or what was the reason why the winter fisheries needed to go to zero if it was not Stillaguamish hatchery fish?
Thank you, Commissioner. I don't believe I said that. I thought what I was showing was that we made a whole bunch of fishery reductions to get to a rate on Stillaguamish Mark Chinook that we would get co-manager agreement for a fishery package to move forward. If I misspoke, I apologize, but I don't think I said that it was not a constraint.
Okay. So I'm glad you clarified that, because I wasn't hearing it that way. So would you... If you're just talking to the common person, hanging on the Little League fence now asking you about this. Of course, we're not having any Little League ball games now, but and they said, well, what was the reason why I can't go fishing next winter out of Roach Harbor? Is it a common thing to say, well, the Stillaguamish hatchery fish were the biggest reason? They were the biggest constraint. I mean, there's a mix of things. I know it's hard to say it was that one little thing there, but if there's a common perception that that was the biggie, would that be the right common perception?
I think so. I mean, with that, you'll always have a constraint with all of these stocks. So if that constraint had not been there, I don't know how everything else would have shaken out. There were other stocks where we were very close or at ceilings, but there's, you know, pre-terminal and terminal fisheries that get planned at the same time. But yes, that was the driver for the reductions this year. If that wasn't there, would we have bumped up against Snohomish or something else before we could have all the winter fisheries back? I don't know, but it was the main driver as we made the final fishery plans.
Getting them all back up is not the trying to figure out what to this dramatic effect of going to zero. And on Mr. Patillo's testimony to hurry up and adopt the RMP, I understand just a tiny little bit about why the RMP was not adopted on schedule earlier in the spring, and has something to do with the modeling of a Canadian fishery that wasn't completely modeled to start with. Maybe correct me if I've got that wrong, but anyway, there's some sort of technical snag there. There was something was left out, and that's why it wasn't modeled. While we're looking into that, is it worth an exercise to try to look to the next 9 years or the next 10 years and see how often Stillaguamish hatchery fish the limit on those fish would come into play again as a primary limiter in, well, I could say, the winter fishery, but I'll try to simplify things in the winter fishery. I don't want to ask you to answer that question right now. There's so much in play, but I guess when it comes down to people testifying, hurry up and adopt this plan, there's a lot of benefits to doing so. That's why we endorse moving forward. But if the Stillaguamish hatchery fish are going to be a blocker in 9 out of the next 10 years, you know, I'm not so sure that's the best policy choice.
Thank you, Commissioner. I wouldn't say that it was that one sort of northern fishery technical issue that is stopping us from moving forward. I tried to emphasize the difficulty we had on the Mid-Hood Canal management objective this year. I don't think I said during the presentation, we actually entered a formal meet and confer process with the tribes over that during North of Falcon. It was received a lot of our attention because of the importance of the raid on that stock. The modeling changes that are going to be coming at us soon could have similar effects for a lot of stocks. So unless we have an understanding with the co-managers with how we're going to respond as the model changes, are we going to go back and revisit objectives and see if changes are appropriate? That's one of the key pieces to moving forward. The Stillaguamish marked piece, we could put different abundances in the model and see what happens to exploitation rates, but I don't know how we predict what the forecasts are going to look like 10 years out for that stock. What I heard in Mr. Patillo's comment was that we need to move forward quick with a plan that doesn't include a marked Stillaguamish constraint. Mm-hmm. We've been working with the tribe on that issue for 3 years now, so it's not something that we're going to be able to make disappear and move a plan forward. It's going to we've spent a lot of work on that one, trying to come up with some compromises that aren't quite as possibly constraining, and we haven't gotten very far. So I don't see a quick path forward as much as I would like to, just because of these modeling issues that we've got to sort out. And Ron's heard me screaming about this all spring, so he might want to add to it. But
yeah, go ahead, Ron.
Thank you, Commissioner Kehoe. Kyle, no, I thought you did a nice job responding there. I think we have a difficulty because we've got a hatchery marked fish that is a part of a conservation program so that Northern Fisheries will sample it electronically so we can see what the overall impact is. Those are choices that were made long ago as those programs came online to mark them. We are currently working towards increasing the number of coded wire tags out there to improve the system. It's a very difficult situation. Like Kyle said, Kyle, I think you shorted us a little time there on how long we've been talking about it, but we just haven't. We've had a lot of different people involved in working this issue, and we don't seem to make the progress that we think we should be able to so far.
Chair Carpenter.
I just want to speak a little bit to, I think the trust issue that the public is having with what we do, what the agency does, and our responsibilities to oversee the stakeholders that we represent. And in no way, shape, or form is this directed at anything negative as it relates to the tribe. As a matter of fact, I hope we can work together going forward more diligently than we have. But when people start to see their opportunities to participate in world-class fisheries, primarily, if not almost totally, in Puget Sound on hatchery fish via the Mark Selective Fisheries program that the public has paid for a couple decades now or more, they get frustrated. And I think that one of the gentlemen spoke to the effect that that has on people's businesses, on people's jobs, not just fishermen, but marinas, both private and public, the Cabela's and Bass Pro Shops of the world, Sportco. It's a real concern, and people are getting quite angry. So I guess my closing comment on that is we have to come up with something that's responsive and try and figure out a way to make the future better and not worse. And so I just think we need to work on that. I think we need to drill down on it, and we need to talk very candidly about what's next and how we're going to affect the future in a positive way, I hope.
Thank you, Chair. Any other Fish Committee members?
Commissioner Kehoe, this is yep. Commissioner Graybill.
Please. And
I was disappointed to hear that the potential for getting an RMP done isn't good. That was proposed as a solution to get things back on track for North of Falcon, level the playing field, come to some sort of agreement so we're going in at a different level and into North of Falcon than we have in the past. And, that was the hope, 10-year plan so that we know what we're dealing with well into the future, and it's not year to year, the same drill where we're down to the last day. Kyle, I think you mentioned it once again, it was an 11th hour result. And when I agreed with Pat that I thought there was real high hope for the RMP allowing us to move forward to a future that Larry's trying to get to. But Ron, that doesn't sound like it's very doable right now, given the conditions with our negotiations with the tribe. And I agree with you. I think the still Iguamish constraints have been in front of us for longer than the last 3 years. It seems to, every year I've been to North of Falcon, it seems to have been on the table. But I'd like to, what is the reality of being able to make progress on the RMP?
Commissioner Graybill, I'll remind us all what Did you want to go, Commissioner Carpenter?
No, go ahead.
I guess maybe it's a question that potentially dovetails in with what Commissioner Grabo asked, Ron. So I pardon the interruption, but I what are your views about the potential and the methodology for getting a go-it-alone state plan and how that would fit into the short-term and long-term strategies in your mind? Because I think the RMP, and the 4D participation, the state's standalone plan are somehow linked, Ron. I think in frankly, in quite a number of ways.
So I'll do my best at trying to answer both questions. So Commissioner Carpenter, since yours is the most fresh on my mind, from a coverage perspective, as Mr. Patillo said, there's a long period of time, at least 18 months, for NOAA to go through a coverage from a standalone permit for the state of Washington. And so if we're going to say we're going to step away from a co-manager process and move that direction, number one, just because we have our standalone permit does not negate the fact that we have to go through North Falcon. We still have to work through what the allocation differences are and what fisheries are going to be in place for the species that return to Puget Sound. So the discussions of how we're going to fish, where we're going to fish, don't go away. I remind myself frequently that in 2016, when we didn't finish on time, that we had a whole bunch of people cheering for us, that we didn't finish, that we stood strong. And that lasted about 6 days, I think, until people realized that they weren't going to fish. And getting our own permit means that for about 18 months, we likely don't have a pathway to fish. And so you were going to take a $100 million industry out of Puget Sound and say, I know we've got listed fish. I know we've got all these problems with habitat protection. I know we've got a lot of problems with growth, populations increasing, environmental conditions are worsening, but we're not going to fish for 2 years because we want our own permit. And I'm not positive that that's the direction that we need to go. If we focus our attention on a joint plan, do we want to have the exact same plan we have right now? Didn't work out for us very well this year. I'm the first to admit it. Yes, we have a problem. Do we have further conversations to have? Yes, we do. And we're working towards those, but I'm not, have we explored? Do we know the steps that we'd have to take to get to a new location for our own permit? Chair Carpenter, absolutely. But that is a mountain to climb to get there, sir. And Commissioner Graybill, I have completely forgotten your question. I apologize.
Go ahead, Dave.
Well, first of all, Ron, thank you for really clarifying. I mean, that's a constant question. Why don't we get our own permit? Why don't we do our own fisheries? You did a good job of answering that, what the consequences would be. We realized that came home to us in 2016. And so thank you for refreshing our minds about that process. My question was, what is the likelihood that we can proceed on a timely manner to get an RMP in place, see, prior to next year's North of Falcon meetings?
Yeah, so thank you, Commissioner Graybill. I appreciate that. And again, Mr. Patillo had talked about a prompt RMP. And but let's not forget he spoke to it in with the context of removing the hatchery program and the constraints that it showed us this year from the Stillaguamish. And as Kyle Addicks had informed the commission earlier, the last 3 years, I think we submitted a plan after about a year's worth of work in December of, or yeah, December 1st of 2017. Yeah, it's 3.5-4 years, a lot of work and a lot of different people that have worked on that issue, that have tried to do things. We've taken commission suggestions about more capital work to improve the facilities and make them bulletproof to pathogens and environmental conditions and all those things, to where we could help improve the conditions. The problem that we have within the Stillaguamish is habitat related. We have huge flooding issues and a lot of sediment that are killing a lot of hatchery, or natural population during major flood events. And there are times, I'll share a story. The Stillaguamish tribe has been in the past disappointed in the lack of support that they've received from us as they go after funding for those habitat conditions, because we have them compete against everybody else in the state. Right now, we're working our tails off at putting a team together that will focus on the Stillaguamish to help expedite everything that's legally possible to expedite to get to improved recovery efforts and habitat improvements. I don't think there's a different answer other than that. Do I think that there are still improvements to the RMP and how we look at and manage? Absolutely. The tools that we develop and the professionalism that our staff have, along with tribal staff, and how those models run, top notch. Are they always looking to make them better? Absolutely. But our situation is not not necessarily all harvest driven. I think that there have been looks at the minimal harvest influence relative to southern resident killer whales, as well as a strong pattern of meeting expectations for exploitation rates that don't impair recovery found by the regulatory body of NOAA.
All right, Ron, it sounds to me like the Stillaguamish stocks, which I believe are down to in the neighborhood of 900 fish, they have constrained the fisheries in Puget Sound for the last 3 or 4 years. And it sounds like they're preventing the process of the RMP going forward too. That one issue is stalling a lot of good work in a path forward that we could make plans for the years to come. And I look to you for, the solution to that. Is there a way the commission can be more involved? I've always felt that you and Kyle and the people that are involved with the tribes on almost a day-to-day basis are doing the job, but it doesn't seem like we're getting anywhere, and I don't think it's because of your efforts, and we need to consider some fresh direction on that. And also, one other question, I just wanted you to confirm that if we started the process of getting our own permit and decided to step away from north of Falcon for that period, I do understand that there's like an 18-month cycle of permitting. But are you saying that we would absolutely not be allowed to fish Puget Sound in the coast during that period?
Commissioner Graybill, thanks for the question. To clarify, our RMP covers, and the fishery authorization covers Puget Sound. I believe that the coast could continue under the permit for the ocean because of the what would be considered I'll put it in simplistic terms, a small enough number of impacts that it might not have a detrimental effect. Therefore, it could continue in the future. But it's the Puget Sound fisheries, both marine and freshwater, and all those fisheries that then might have an impact on salmon that would be at jeopardy.
Commissioner Keogh?
Yeah, go ahead, Larry.
Ron, I have two timing questions just I'd like to throw out for your review and consideration. I don't expect you to give us an answer today. Do you realistically think this the RMP can be patched back together and have it as our management tool prior to 2022? That's the first question. The second question is, could you either maybe assign to one staff person, I'd like to just know more about this 18-month window that you're talking about, the possibility, reality or not, about a permit for management purposes. So those are two questions in one.
And thank you, Commissioner, or Chair Carpenter, pardon me. If we were to be able to finalize the RMP by the end of October-ish, I'll say, depending on if the past internal NEPA work is still good that NOAA conducted when we turned it in back in December of 2017, yes, you could have an RMP authorized by May of 2022. We still have some tool work to do. We still have a lot of work to do, and we still haven't resolved all of the issues, such as what Kyle described. We were in formal meet and confer relative to the Mid-Hood Canal population. So do I have 100% confidence that yes, we're going to get there and have that permit turned into NOAA as it exists? No. Or with modifications that we still think need to be occurred? No. But those are the steps that we will be working towards to get that in and to get that in place with the needed changes we think we need. For the improved listed natural populations and assuring that we our activities don't jeopardize recovery within the Puget Sound stocks.
Okay. Appreciate that, Ron. And I do want to close out my comments on this issue with the work that you folks put in. You, Kyle, Mark, many others, is appreciated and respected. We're getting a lot of heat about a lot of issues, and we're trying to take it on in a pragmatic, thoughtful manner. And I appreciate your listening to us and working with us, because we're in this bag together.
Absolutely, Chair Carpenter. I appreciate that. You as the commissioner with the longest standing time at North Falcon meetings from your previous life in business and your activities both in state and internationally on salmon management, very much appreciate your comments there, sir.
Thank you, Ron.
Okay.
Mr. Kehoe?
Yes.
Commissioner Thorburn, I have a question.
Sure.
Because this question about our own permit keeps surfacing. And I go back to the slide that Kyle showed of all the legal obligations that we're under to develop these fisheries. So, I think it was recognized we still have to do negotiations as co-managers, but what difference would it make if we did get our own permit? We'd still have all those other legal obligations that require the kinds of negotiations that go on at North of Falcon.
Who wants to take that one?
I'll take a stab at it, Commissioner Kehoe. Yeah, that list of it lumped a lot of it into the legal background. There's the stipulation on mass marking and co-management from the 90s that gives us a lot of direction on how we interact with the tribes, not doing things that will affect their fisheries without communicating with them first. It would change the dynamic a little bit if we knew we had ESA authorization, but I don't know how it would actually change the negotiations, because we would still be trying to get to an agreement on a set of fisheries that meets all of our conservation objectives. It might reduce the leverage that one side has a little bit if we each had our own individual permit, but at the end of the day, we would still have to have fisheries set that meet all of the conservation objectives. So it wouldn't be like we go off in a vacuum and plan our fisheries and let them know what they're going to be. It would still be a difficult process, even with independent authorization.
Okay. Does that answer your question, Commissioner Thorburn?
Thanks. Yeah. Okay.
I will make maybe just some closing comments here. Wearing my member of the public hat in the North of Falcon this year, I do think the staff did a great job in communicating with stakeholders, at least on the commercial side. Many challenges. I want to echo Pat Patillo's comments about Mark Beltzell. He is a great asset to the department, and happy for him for his promotion. I have mentioned this before. I mean, part of the problem in the North of Falcon this year is that we were just simply, and I think Kyle referred to it, we were undermanned. We had a lot of people move, a lot of expertise, and I don't mean to make excuses here and for the public, and but I mean, it is a reality. And the other reality I think that that we all are grappling with is a continuing decline in salmon populations, coho, chinook, and unfortunately we had some poor chum returns. So I think this is a good discussion. I'm glad the public had a chance to weigh in. And I think if there is a path forward on this RMP, this is the way we should go and continue to engage with the tribes, come up with maybe other possible solutions. And just do the best we can. And the problem too is that we're facing, as far as the manpower problem, is that we've got a hiring freeze. And it's not just this agency, it's all state agencies, all state government. And I think we're starting to see that too. Ron is, he's overly committed with obviously you guys know this is a huge issue for the public and for the commission. I just want to wrap it up with those comments. So why don't we, I don't know, if people want to take a quick break or maybe Before we get Chad, I would like to take a quick break if that's doable, say back at 3:30, if that's okay with folks.
Yeah, Bob, I don't know what Ron, what you're thinking for the next two items, but I would hope that we could we focus on trying to wrap those up by four? I know that might be a bit of a rush, but I think that's something we should strive for.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Hey, Tess, while we're on this break, could you call me so maybe I don't have to go through this process with two items going tomorrow during the regular meeting?
And Tess, I got your email too. I'll work on that
before
tomorrow morning. So thank you.
Cool. Sounds good.
Okay. Thanks. Back at 3:30.
Roger that.
Chad Herring, good to see your face, Chad.
Thank you, Commissioner Kehoe. Good to see my face as well.
Yeah. And why don't we kick off with you and Willapa?
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Kehoe. Nikki, if you could you pull up the document that I sent? Thank you. So in the sake of time management here, I'll keep this brief. Just a quick update on where we are in drafting the comprehensive review document. Right now, as we sit here today, we're probably 70-75% the way through the document. Currently, it's grown a little bit since I wrote this document that you see here in front of you. I'm at about 85 pages and 28,000 words. Expect to have a final completion of a document that's all been formatted and edited and ready for posting by the end of July.
Just so you know, Chad, you don't get paid by the word, okay? So,
Kurt Hughes also told me I don't get to count blank pages either. So, I appreciate the comment. Thank you. So, I'm looking at having a draft document, at least just in terms of the body of the document, done by the end of June. Got a few internal folks who have been identified as folks that will help me edit and put together kind of the final formatting and all that. Hope to have a document similar in style to what was done for the Columbia River in terms of, packaged nicely and with the electronic format and linkages and all that sort of stuff from the table of contents. Things have shifted around a little bit from the initial table of contents that I shared with Fish Committee, I believe back in January. Although I will say that's not it's not in content. It's really just in languaging, and things have moved around a little bit just as I develop the flow of the document to help it flow a little better. Mostly around where some of the commissioner emphasis questions are and that sort of stuff, and things have been relabeled a little bit. So like I said, hope to have that done by July of the end of July 2020. And then we can get that posted on the website and hopefully work towards getting some of those nice bound books put together and get out for you all to review. In August, like I said, we're hoping to have that done by the end of July. So then in the August timeframe, that would be available for the public and the advisory group and commissioners as well. To review for that month of August. We would post that on the agency website, not exactly sure where we would do that. Will it be salmon management page, or there's some commission policy review pages, so still need to work out some of the details of that, where exactly we post it. Planning on having two more meetings to gather some feedback before we finalize this portion of the policy review process. I'm looking at having an advisory group meeting and a public meeting. We'll hold those down in Raymond in August, and I'm looking at the second and third week of August for that. I'm trying to be cognizant of different things going on. One, a fleet reduction work group, and then also Columbia River Fisheries and scheduling around when some of our commercial stakeholders will be arriving back from Alaska and all that, to make sure that they're able to participate. And so at those meetings, we'll kind of share the highlights and the lowlights of the comprehensive review document itself, and take some feedback from the public on their thoughts on the implementation and performance of policy C-3622. Moving into September of 2020 is when we tentatively have scheduled to go in front of the full commission with the kind of final presentation, once again, focusing on the highlights and lowlights of implementation and performance of the policy, and report back on the public feedback that we've gathered. We've had a significant number of meetings. This process began back in January of 2018 with some initial meetings with the public. So wrap up all that public comment, and then seek approval from the commission on the comprehensive review document itself. So that's kind of the timeline that I'm proposing through the rest of the summer to finish out at least the completion of the review document itself. One thing I would like to add is, one of the things that has been a little bit challenging is the answering some of the commissioner emphasis questions. With the substantial amount of changes that we've made to fishery management in terms of monitoring programs and that sort of stuff, there was a lot of, methods, way we estimate impacts, specifically recreational fisheries, that are different now than what we did previously. We don't really have the ability to go back and recreate some of that stuff. So we're doing the best we can to put it in the best context, but that has been a little bit challenging at times, given how those programs, those monitoring programs, stock assessment, recreational monitoring, commercial monitoring, have all shifted, and as we've increased the effort and increased, gone from really what we would consider a data poor environment during policy development to a situation where we do have a lot of good data. A very short time frame, only since 2015 we have some of these, but with moving forward, it should really provide a lot better data sources to inform policy actions.
Yeah. Thanks, Chad, for that. And I will say, we have experienced some of that. Maybe not to the extent you're seeing that on the Willapa, but in the Columbia River review, there's some kind of data gaps or some kind of changes in approaches that makes it kind of challenging to do a before and after kind of analysis. But I think you can only do the best that you can do. And some data, some analysis is better than none. So, any questions, comments from the committee?
Watching?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the presentation, Chad. Good to see this work is moving forward. We had seen a table of contents some time ago, and you mentioned that you're into the internal review stage at this time. Is there just another table of contents that you could show us at this time that we could look at before we get to the final report?
Thank you for that question, Commissioner McIsaac. I hesitate to answer straight away because I'm kind of in the final, you know, polishing and moving things around and checking and making sure all those questions are in the appropriate sections. And still, we've still got some writing itself to do. You know, most of, like I mentioned, most of the document is complete, but there's still some loose ends to tie up. There's still some questions, Commissioner Emphasis questions to answer, and some sections that have left to be written that we hope to have finalized here over the next 2 to 3 weeks. With that being said, I could probably get you out something over, you know, by the end of the month that would be more telling. But what I would say is I hope I didn't concern anybody with that statement on table of contents. What I really meant was there were some sections that were labeled, you know, population designations, right? Those have been relabeled to broodstock management objectives. Some of the Commissioner Emphasis questions when that original table of contents was produced were in specific sections of the document. Those, based on the flow of the document, and as I really looked at it and spent more time writing it and flushing it out, I might have moved a question from one portion to another. Overall, the format and everything else is really the same. So long-winded answer, yes, but I would hope I could have a couple of weeks before I got that just to make sure everything's polished and where it needs to be and reflective of what the final document will be.
Yeah, well, thank you. And it would be fully considered as just a draft, and that's awesome.
Any other questions from the committee members?
I hadn't heard, if I may, Commissioner Keogh, I hadn't heard the term Commissioner Emphasis Documents. I assume, Chad, that you're speaking to the original list of questions that were provided to you, or has there been more added, or?
No, thanks, Commissioner Carpenter. No, there aren't. I'm just following the nomenclature that was used in Columbia River Policy Review of calling those specific questions that we received initially as we embarked on this process, just calling them Commissioner Emphasis questions. I have not received any additional from the 33 or 34 that were originally provided in a markup version of the policy itself.
Thank you for the explanation.
Okay, well, any other commissioners on the line that would like to ask questions? So hearing none, Chad, thank you. Good to see you again. I think we all look forward to seeing the draft and kind of giving some maybe guidance before it goes out for public comment. But I too, I'm glad to see that this is moving along and continue to work on it. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you everyone for this opportunity. Have a good afternoon.
Yep. Okay, so I think we've got one more agenda item, and that is the CARES Act Fisheries Assistance. Ron.
Thank you, Commissioner Kehoe. Appreciate the opportunity to be able to give you a very brief overview of the CARES Act. We're very grateful for our members of Congress and the work that they did to put together the development of and the appropriations of the Coronavirus Aid Relief and Economic Security Act, the CARES Act. And within that act, there is a fisheries assistance section, 12,005, that allocates $300 million to coastal states, provinces, and tribes for relief for their downturn of revenue due to the COVID-19 issues of greater than 35%. So there are stipulations within the funding that comes to the states. that you can, the maximum amount of funding that you could receive is $50 million. And the states of Alaska and Washington both received that maximum amount. And again, so commissioners know, this is a briefing. This money comes to the state of Washington, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, certainly with a lot of commercial sectors regulated and work with us, and that we're certainly aware of and are on in management forums with. We're certainly a key participant, but we're also working with the Washington State family, staying closely connected with the governor's office, OFM, the Department of Agriculture, to make sure that we are touching all of those sectors that need to be communicated with to seek if they have taken or had the financial loss of 35% due to the COVID-19 pandemic. We do know that NOAA Fisheries has provided us some guidance that the fishery is sorry about that. The NOAA Fisheries has provided us guidance. One of the interesting facts is that it does not include freshwater businesses. The three sectors that they did the analysis on to do the allocations to state were businesses for hire, so our charter industry. They lumped commercial fisheries with aquaculture. In this particular case, finfish aquaculture lumped back to the Department of Agriculture under a different section of the CARES Act. And so we have shellfish growers and shellfish wholesalers, and then processors within the three different sectors. So commercial aquaculture and then what they call seafood. But it's processors, wholesalers. So where we are in the process, we continue to work with congressional staffers that helped develop language to make sure that we're meeting the intent, staying close to the state family. We also check in regularly with the I think it's the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies, AFWA. So the coastal states, we all get together and can compare notes on what we're hearing, what we've been given by NOAA or through our interstate commissions. And we're all working on developing our draft spend plans, or at least coming up with ideas on those spend plans. Here within the next couple of days, we hope to announce some public meetings to get together with our commercial sectors to share with them the information about the act itself, some of its the information that NOAA has provided to us, as well as some of our initial thoughts on the spend plan. We'll give ourselves a couple of week break, and then the tail end of June, we would hope to pull all the sectors back together to share our spend plan, and then have final review by the state family, and provide that to NOAA with an overall goal of having possible CARES Act relief funding begin distribution from the Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission by late August of this year. So a very aggressive schedule. We're lucky to have the expertise of the Pacific States staff. They are the ones that have typically dispersed and helped with disaster relief funding distribution in the past, so they have a lot of experience. I'd also just publicly give a shout out to Ed Bowles from Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. He's been a good confidant and just a good peer to bounce things off of and chat with about this particular fund source. So with that, I'd ask if there are any questions.
Questions from the Fish Committee. What about commissioners that are on the line?
Commissioner Thorburn does.
Yes, go ahead.
Not a Fish Committee member, but a couple of clarification questions. So, the first about the finfish as part of aquaculture and managed by ag. And then the second regarding the tribe. So you said that our appropriation is $50 million. Is the finfish a portion of that $50 million? So we're not administering the entire $50 million. That's the first question. And then related to the tribes, are we administering to tribes, or do they get that separately? And if so, did any Washington tribes qualify for these appropriations?
Commissioner Thorburn, thanks for the questions. So relative to the clarity around the aquaculture piece, within aquaculture, those businesses that have freshwater facilities that could have freshwater facilities or facilities that then grow fish out in net pens that actually rear finfish, those go through a separate section of the CARES Act. And that's being handled through USDA. We are not part of that at this time. So I hope that helps answer the question. The portion of that aquaculture piece that we have is shellfish, and there are some non-finfish culture items that could show up. We're still investigating, but that would fall under the funding that comes to the state. The money that the state has is designated to the state of Washington. What we are, there is a separate line item allocation for the federally recognized tribes of the West Coast, just shy of $5.1 million. But there's also a provision that within the state share that if there was a federally recognized tribe under a federal fishery that they and they were an eligible applicant that they could apply to the funding as well. We are still trying to work through what fisheries those might be. We know we have tribal members that have state licenses and participate in our state fisheries. I know of a couple personally through North Falcon that one is a Puget Sound gillnetter, another is a Columbia River gillnetter. And certainly those people that have those licenses and the small businesses would and met the qualifications that they'd lost 35% revenue within the period described, we could allow them to apply and they would be eligible for funding. If you look at when the coronavirus really took hold, we started hearing about it in January with a downturn of the Asian market for shellfish. That being said, so if you, with the flexibility that NOAA has given us, if we say January 1 to June 30th, you have to be able to show a 35% revenue loss in that period of time. And if that's the period, well then it's going to be difficult. I'm not aware of any gillnet fisheries for salmon, let's say, or other fisheries that are occurring during that period of time. So it's going to refine itself just by the period because of the COVID loss. But I hope Commissioner Thorburn, that answered your question.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's pretty complicated.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Mr. Keith?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Acting Chair. So the word commercial can be used in different manners in different fisheries. In this situation, are charter boat businesses or freshwater guide businesses in the recreational sector eligible for any of this funding?
Yes, sir. Commissioner McIsaac, our charter boat industry that fishes in the marine areas are the guides, as we, as I view them, as I think our licenses say. So those that are fishing in freshwater would not qualify. One of the big kerfluffles of the CARES Act is that the Great Lakes states are not receiving any of this funding because of the freshwater commercial activities that take place there. There were other provisions, small business grants, those types of things within the CARES Act that those businesses qualified for, but the fishery assistance did not qualify them for that. So yes to charters, guides don't seem to fit the criteria that NOAA laid out.
Okay, any other questions? Because I have one just to clarification, just to wrap up. That is, and I didn't hear you touch on this, but another complicating factor so that $50 million allocated to the state of Washington, that is intended to apply for eligible participants in fisheries that occur in Alaska, but the participant is a Washington resident. So first of all, am I correct in that?
Commissioner Kehoe, you're absolutely correct. I did fail to speak to that. So the home porting of those businesses, whether they are at-sea processors or purse seiners, longline fleet, if they home port to Washington, then yes, they would also qualify.
So you're talking about companies, you know, halibut fishermen, crab fishermen, you know, that live in Washington, salmon fishermen, so that have, you know, impacts related to COVID-19, but live in Washington, fish in Alaska, and then the processing company. So it's you know, I don't envy you, Ron, and kind of these kind of things. It's no good deed goes unpunished, too, you know. So, but, you know, I'm here as a, you know, working in the commercial industry. I have reached out to some of my colleagues here represent different groups. And I'm glad to hear that you're going to have some public meetings. That's a good thing. I may ask if it's okay. Maybe you might facilitate a meeting with some of the folks that are here just right in Fisherman's Terminal at some point. But, well, that's down the road. But I just want to let, you know, the rest of the commission know that another complicating factor is that these losses don't necessarily occur in Washington, but rather it's in terms of fishing opportunity. And that's different than many of the other disaster packages that I've been involved in, unfortunately. Yep. I can't recall anything
Thank you, Commissioner Kehoe. I would hope maybe after we do our first round of outreach to the sectors to pull in, if you still believe that we need to come up or try to provide a online virtual meeting with a certain group, and we can work it in. I'd be happy to do that.
Okay, but I'm glad to hear about the. So as soon as you kind of know what the timing is on these public meetings, that would be good so that we can, I can share.
Again, we're waiting for some okays, but hope to have that word out by the end of the week.
Okay, very good. So we are just at 4 o'clock or 3:59.
I think Commissioner Carpenter wants to say something.
Go ahead.
I'm going to be real short. It'll be brief. I would hope and assume, Ron, that somewhere in the future, I don't have a time frame, that maybe you could do an update with the full commission on how this has evolved without going into all the details, but maybe give us the kind of a recap of how this evolves. I think it would be educational to most of us.
Sure.
And the only other thing I want to say before the day's over it was a good discussion. A lot of issues we got into, a lot of issues, you know, are still left to be dealt with. But I want to thank Mr. Commissioner Bob Kehoe for filling in for my screw up on my computer or my phone or my whatever. But thank you, Bobby.
Hey, happy to do it.
And your haircut looks good, Bob.
I don't have a haircut. I need somebody like Mr. McKay, or Commissioner McIsaac, whose wife cuts his hair. So, amen. And then, so Commissioner Graybill, if you're okay to give the Fish Committee report tomorrow.
Yes, and I will try to encapsulate it as best I can so that I don't take up too much of our time tomorrow at the beginning of our meeting. I'll try to condense this, and I did take copious notes, but I'll try to give people the high points.
Okay, and in advance, Dave, I thank you for doing that. Tomorrow's going to be quite busy, and appreciate your agreeing to do that.
Oh, my pleasure. And on the discussion on haircuts, I've said that I look like I have a mullet, but because of my balding, it's been corrected. I have a skullet.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you, everyone.
You bet.
And we'll see everybody bright and early tomorrow. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye.